Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo and Anthony LaPanta. We're coming to you from Chateau LaPanta. I was hoping that there was going to be something cooking on the stove or on the grill outside. I was hoping to see Phil and Stanley here barking. And I come in and I've been here 150 times and this is the quietest I've ever seen your house. And there's no smell of great food in the air.
Well, I was just getting mentally focused for a big show. So we had the sound off of everything and locked in. I tried to convince Vinny to stick around and make a cameo appearance, but he's got a golf swing to work on, so he had to get to the range and then the gym, and that's about a 4.5-5 hour daily trip for him. Margo was a little uneasy about Phil disrupting the podcast, so she took the dogs on their daily 5-mile walk, and we'll see. They might make an appearance before we're done.
We'll
find out.
I was going to bring an extra mic just for Margo. Like, we could just say, Anthony, you know, go to the gym, get ready for the game tonight. You know, that'd be perfectly fine. We'll have Margo
on. Nothing, it would be nothing for me to worry about what you guys might discuss.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, though. That, like, truly, you don't care. Like,
I don't care.
Yeah, you have no, there's not one party that's embarrassed by any of these LaPanta Margo stories, nothing.
You know, we were talking with Margo yesterday, and she's nosy by nature, so she's constantly, you know, she wants to know exactly what I'm doing and how much money we spent and what dinner cost and where we went and how many bottles of wine we had and all that, all the time. And it isn't because she's like trying to say, you can't do that. She just wants to know. And that's why we joke all the time, because she'll call you when we're on the road to find out what's going on. And we were just talking the other day about that, I mean, I couldn't care any less if she knows exactly where I am or exactly what I'm doing or exactly what I mean, it doesn't matter. But she finds it very entertaining, and you seem to also. I'm all for it. Whatever you guys want to talk about.
She sent me a screen capture the other day. She has some app that knows where everybody in the family is. And she goes, look at Ariana's battery in her phone right now. It was like at 2%. I'm like, well, you need to call her. You know, her to juice up.
We were talking about this, that she's been able to, you know, I mean, I'm sure people listening, obviously, most of them probably know this, but she has an app that tracks all that stuff. And I never knew that she had all this information for a long time. And it was last Christmas, not this Christmas, the year before, that all of a sudden we were talking one night and I found out that's how she, because there were some times where she'd say, yeah, did you stop anywhere on your way home from the office today? And I'd be thinking, well, yeah, I stopped and, oh, you didn't, I stopped at the grocery store and, oh, you didn't stop and play any golf or anything? And I'd be like, well, how would she, I mean, I didn't pay for anything. I stopped at a putting green. I mean, how would she know? Like, there wasn't a charge on my card at a driving range or something. And, you know, I would always just tell her, yeah, I stopped and chipped and putted for a while. And, oh, okay. And she had this weird sense. Like, she always seemed to know. And then sometimes I'd get a text like, hey, make sure you charge your battery, because, you know, when we'd be on the road somewhere, and I'd look, and sure enough, my phone's at 4% or 8% or something. And so then it was one night that Christmas we were chatting and kind of realized, like, well, why didn't you just tell me that you could see exactly what my battery charge was? And, you know, maybe you could have helped me more often, helped me before it got down to 4% and I was stuck in Calgary somewhere.
Yeah, that could be dangerous, but.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, what the worst case scenario is, she worries that, you know, I stay out too late
sometimes. She's probably disappointed by what she sees.
Sometimes, but she's mostly just worried, like, you know, I hope that tomorrow morning you wake up and you're sharp and your brain's working and you can call a game tomorrow night and you don't sound like you had 3 bottles of wine the night before. And so that's her biggest concern.
Yeah. Let's discuss this team right now. I mean, you know, it's an interesting situation that these final two games are, because, you know, especially tonight's game, it means nothing. You really, as much as you say you don't want to lollygag through the game and not get yourself hurt, that is in the back of a lot of these guys' minds. I mean, you're so close to the playoffs. This game means nothing. You're trying to not you're trying to not get hurt. And so I think that we're going to go into tonight's game and seeing a lot of changes. They're going to call some guys up from the taxi squad, Parisian Hunt will play. And I think that they're going to go into this game with a different tack than they did, say, last night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it'll look that much different from last night, to be honest. To me, it doesn't matter much. I mean, they knew going into these games they had almost nothing on the line. Mm-hmm. There was Colorado would have had to lose twice and Minnesota wins twice. That just wasn't going to happen. I think whether they admit it or not and whether the players admit it or not, you could tell last night there wasn't the same edge. There wasn't the same attention to detail. There wasn't the same compete level. And I always worry about that. It's impossible to tell guys you have to try to create that when it isn't there. Mm-hmm. And you know in the back of their mind, they're thinking, well, next week I'll block that shot. But the last thing I want tonight is a puck ankle that's going to make me slower on Sunday night. And that's a reasonable approach to take. So, you know, but I always worry that I think any time that you take your foot off the gas, that you run the risk of not being able to recover the edge, the intensity, the focus that you've been playing with for the last 2 weeks, where I think Minnesota's game has really been good. We'll see. These guys are pros. They've all been through it before, but it always is in the back of my mind that it's just hard to get that back when you back away from it.
Yeah, I had a Billy on a podcast this morning. Obviously, by the time this gets out, we'll probably all know, but he explained that I just went to Cap Friendly. Guess what the most popular buyout on their search is right now? Top two.
I'm going to guess that one of them plays center for the Minnesota Wild.
Actually, one of them plays left wing on the Minnesota Wild.
Okay.
So he said that there's going to be some changes in the lineup tonight. The other thing is, and again, I don't know if this podcast is going to come out before the game or tomorrow morning, but right now we don't know who the Wild are going to play in the playoffs. I assume still it's Vegas, just because I think that Colorado wants to get home ice advantage for the duration of the playoffs, because they truly believe that they're a Stanley Cup contender. So I think that they're going to go into this game against the Kings and go for it all and then take their chances with a Blues team that looks like they're pretty scrappy. Blues team that's also swept Colorado fairly recently as well. So let's start by talking if the Wild play Vegas in the first round. Playoffs are a different animal. Wild are 11-2-1 all time against Vegas, or am I wrong on that? 11-2-1, I believe.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
This year it's five. No, because they have two OT losses this year. So five, one, and two this year.
So maybe 11-3-1, but whatever. I mean, it does feel like that the matchup is really good with this team, but the playoffs are a different story.
They're a different story, but they match up better with Vegas than they do with Colorado. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. And you know, the games, I look at it and you have to eliminate what happens in overtime and shootouts during the regular season, because you won't ever get one of those in the playoffs. So to me, the games that ended in a tie at the end of regulation, I just throw out when evaluating, well, how did you fare against this team? So if you look at it, Minnesota won 4 out of 5 against Vegas that were decided 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're Vegas, you won 4 out of 5 against St. Louis. If you're Colorado, you about the same. They were 5-2, I think, against Minnesota and 5-3 against the Blues. And so I don't know that who they play matters much to Colorado, but home ice does for sure. I think it matters a lot for Minnesota. I just think they match up better with Vegas. I think Vegas's top line is more of a heavy line than a speed line, which I think Eriksson Ek, Foligno, Greenway probably match up better against those guys. Not that they can't handle themselves against McKinnon, but they're better against Stone, Pacioretty, Stevenson. And I think Minnesota's other depth lines match up really well with Vegas's depth line. So it's a better matchup, but either way, the Wild are going to be the underdog. They're going to have some things go their way in the postseason. I really think it's going to be Vegas. And you know, but Minnesota's in the best spot they've been heading into a playoff where they're the underdog. Maybe since the year that, you know, I thought they'd beat Colorado the year they beat Colorado, and I thought they'd beat St. Louis the year they beat St. Louis. But in both of those cases, I don't think the team they were playing was as good as the team they're going to face this year.
Yeah.
I think Minnesota might be in a better spot than they were either of those seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I look at this team, is that they are deeper than probably that we've ever seen them. And the other thing with them is that what makes this year feel different is the fact they have multiple game breakers and goaltending. Now, obviously, Cam Talbot, he's in a bit of a rut here. He's given up 24 goals in his last
six starts.
But, and I'm not as much. I will say what I am a little worried about is their blue line's been pretty erratic lately, especially number 24. And that is something that is going to have to chance, because you can't, you know, that team, the thing about Vegas is that you are going to have, it's going to be a track meet series. It has been in every game. There's no way to avoid that. So you're going to have to score, but you're going to have to be out of your own zone a lot too. And they are a team that likes to play with the puck in the O zone when they're not scoring off the rush. So I think that's the big difference. But I look back to 2018, Anthony, when the Wild played the Jets, and Zucker, Coyle, Niederreiter left that series without 0 points. And these were three guys that the Wild were hoping were going to be for years, take them to the next level. And that was almost sort of the final straw. Now you got Fiala, you got Kaprizov, you have a great Eriksson Ek line. You have guys like Zuccarello out there as well. It just feels different going into the postseason this year.
Well, without a doubt, the elite scoring is the difference, because if you look at every one of the series, and we talked about this the other night on a broadcast, going all the way back to 2013, they get in on the last day, they play Chicago, and they had no chance against that Blackhawks team. But then the next year, they beat the Avs, same Blackhawks team. You beat the Blues, same Blackhawks team. And then you had the year where Dallas had everything going. You had the year when Winnipeg had everything going. The only one aberration is the year that Mike Yeo was in St. Louis and beat Boudreaux's club in the first round. If you throw out that series, in every other case, the other side had the two most electric offensive players. Whether it was Taves and Kane in Chicago, it was MacKinnon and Rantanen in Colorado, it was Tarasenko, it was Benn and Sagan, it was Scheifele and Wheeler and Laine. I mean, in every one of those cases, even last year in Vancouver, I mean, Vancouver had the two probably most electric offensive players in the series.
Definitely.
This year, it's different. This year, I mean, and Fiala and Kaprizov are not MacKinnon and Rantanen, but they're a lot closer than we've ever had. They're the first time the Wild have had players that the game could be upside down and they're good enough to just score a couple goals, where you make an outshot 40-20 and these guys score twice and you win 3-2. So for that reason, it is different. And that's why they've come from behind as many times as they have. I mean, in a shortened season, they have 15 come from behind wins, and what, four of them when they've been down by two goals. That's unheard of.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, let's talk about the goaltending of both Vegas and Colorado, because, you know, the interesting thing is I think they're both teams' goaltending is beatable. And yet you look at their overall numbers. I mean, Leonard and Fleury yesterday won the Jennings for the year for lowest goals against the league. And Grubauer even has a goals against below two. And yet I look at their goaltending as being exposable on both teams. Like, it's interesting, Vegas. Like, we've seen Fleury, who's obviously going to be the number one going in this series. He's either super locked in the playoffs, or he loses himself at times and is very beatable. And I really genuinely believe that the reason why Grubauer has had such great numbers is based off the team, that they spend the majority of the game in the offensive zone and with the puck, and that he doesn't have to face a ton of chances. Look at the game even that the games that the Wild played in Denver earlier this year. They barely tested him, and when they did, he looked a little shaky. So I think that he's beatable.
I think he's beatable. I think one of the things that has hurt Grubauer is that he had to play so much so early in the season. And I don't think there's any coincidence that he ran down a little bit at the end. But I still think, you know, Grubauer is, he's for sure, you wouldn't look at a matchup Talbot v. Grubauer and say huge advantage Minnesota. I mean, but it might be even. And in Vegas's case, it's interesting because we studied the numbers a little bit, and they actually give up more high danger chances than you'd think. Mm-hmm. For a team that is supposedly a structured, and you look at their decor and they're really impressive, and but they give up a lot of high danger chances, not a lot of shots, but they give up more high danger chances than you'd think. I think they're 19th in the league in high danger chances against five on five, which is amazing to me because everybody looks at them and says they're the toughest team to score against in the league. They don't give up a ton of shots because their save percentage is good, but not, it isn't like it's at 93.5. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Minnesota's been able to create chances against them, and I think they'd be able to score against Vegas should that, and let's assume that's the matchup. I think it is. Colorado's going to beat LA tonight, and Minnesota's going to face Vegas. So, you know, to me, I'd say forget about Colorado for right now and focus on Vegas. And I think Minnesota will score in that series, but I think one of the tougher matchups for Minnesota is to keep Vegas's defensemen from taking over the series offensively. They've got, I really like that decor. Theodore Martinez and Pietrangelo, I think they're phenomenal. And Pietrangelo has brought to them exactly what they were missing. And that to me is maybe the key matchup in that entire series is can Minnesota do something to minimize the offensive impact that Vegas's defense can have on the series.
They're really good. Game one of the series Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. I almost replied to your text about how like one of us is super stressed right now. I'm like, well, you know what? One of us is actually working throughout the playoffs. I look at this first round playoff series and you've got to maybe work 2 days.
Well, no, I've got number one. I'm assuming that we will on Bally Sports do a pre and post game show for these games like we always have in the past. So I guess I don't know that for certain. So don't hold me to it, but I only have two of the games off. I mean, if the series
unless it's
goes
a sweep. Maybe the Wild sweep them.
Well, right. I still only have two games off.
Yeah.
But I'm expecting this to be a long series, and I'm actually really disappointed. I mean, you know, we were hearing all these rumors about, you know, what NBC's plans are and what they're going to do. And we kept thinking it was that, well, they want Colorado. So whoever plays Colorado, they're going to take those games. Well, then it turns out what they wanted was Minnesota because if you look at their schedule, it's whoever the Wild play, they're taking games 1 and 4.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with St. Louis, Colorado, or Vegas. It's whoever Minnesota plays, that series they're taking games 1 and 4, and the other series they're not touching. And, you know,
local ratings.
It's local ratings is a big part of it. It's a huge part of it. And Colorado and St. Louis both have good local ratings too, but I'm sure they're thinking that whoever Minnesota plays, we'll just take them because, you know, what we lose in St. Louis, we get in Minnesota, and then, you know, you hope for the best with the others. And so, you know, we always joke about it that would you rather be calling the games for a team that nobody watched, like the Carolina Hurricanes, for example? NBC's not going to take any of their games. So would you rather be calling games there where you know you get to do all 7 in the first round, but nobody's watching, or be covering a team that has a passionate fan base that everybody's watching every single night and know that that means you're going to lose some games both during the regular season and the playoffs? And it's a tough one because this is really tough to sit on the side after you've called the games all year, and then doing the pre and post game shows is nice. It's a good way to stay involved, but it's not the same. It isn't going to feel right on Sunday when game one starts and we're doing a pregame show and then, all right, we'll see you again after the game.
Yeah. I'm doing your pregame show tonight. I didn't realize until I talked to him on the phone that your incredible pregame show producer, Peter Anderson, is his last game tonight.
Yep. He's leaving the company. He's going to take a job with 3M as some kind of an in-house video director role or something. And it's too bad. He's a great, great young man. And we've worked together for a long time. We really have. It's amazing how talented the crew is that we have behind the scenes at Bally Sports. And I don't just throw this out there lightly. I mean, these guys are really, really good. And our producer, John Stroh, our director, Matt Laxton, and Matt Gangle's there sometimes too. And he, of course, is, you know, he does the World Series for Fox and the All-Star Game for Fox. I mean, he's one of the premier directors in the country. But all of our staff behind the scenes, and Peter Anderson, we call him King of the Clowns, and he's been there a long time. He'll be missed, and
beat me in fantasy in the toilet bowl.
You shouldn't mess with a ferret in a toilet bowl.
That's true.
We've proven that. But it's always sad to see guys go. It's amazing how many times, and I'm sure you've experienced it too, where you get into a routine and you just feel like things are never going to change. Like you're going to be you have the same job, you're going to be working with the same people, you're going to be, and all of a sudden, a year later or 2 years later, well, this guy calls you into his office and says, I just took a job somewhere else and I'm leaving. And, you know, it usually all works out, but it's just when you're at it, as long as you've been in your business or I've been in mine, guys come and go and you just have to live to move on. And that's the way it works. So I'm happy for him, but he'll be missed.
Yep, absolutely. We'll go to some Twitter questions in a second, but I did want to tell everybody about Aquarius Home Services. Aquarius Home Services is your one-stop shop for cooling, heating, water treatment, and plumbing. Aquarius can take care of everything in your utility room for you, and their quality of service is absolutely amazing. They respect you, your time, your home, with attention to details that really make a difference, like being on time and cleaning up after themselves. Check out Aquarius Home Services right now for a free water analysis in your home or your cabin and a $49 AC tune-up to get ready for the summer. It's getting warm out. Now is the time to get your AC tuned up. Visit AquariusHomeServices.com for more details.
Yeah, and I want to mention quickly Kowalski's. We had a tremendous Mother's Day dinner here. Margo's a big fan of prime rib, and she's a big horseradish fan. So I stopped by Kowalski's to pick up a prime rib eye roast, basically. And I tell you what, number one, the guys do a great job, like prepping it for you and everything to, you know, get it tied up and all that. But I chatted with the guy at the counter for a little while, picked up a great idea on a preparation method, and it turned out to be phenomenal. But my point is simply this. If you're going to have a great meal, start with the best ingredients, but also lean on the guys who know. A lot of times they even have recipe cards. And if you just say, hey, I'm making a prime rib, do you have a recipe card? They'll give you one. So lean on those guys. They're really knowledgeable. If you're going to have a great meal, you might as well give yourself the best chance. And to do that, go by and stop by Kowalski's on your way. Before we get back to our show, here's a quick word from Bosch Law Firm.
Hi, everyone. Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you, from border to border and all over the great state of Minnesota, to ensure they're treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. Wage loss, medical bills, job insecurity, and the stress of trying to navigate a complicated work comp system on your own. You need someone in your corner who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. To make sure you're being paid all available work comp benefits for your injury, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm anytime. The call is always free and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300 or visit us at workcompexperts.com.
All right, let's talk Zach Parise. Anthony, man, what a tough, delicate situation. I mean, how strange is it? So the Wild tonight, in their final game against the St. Louis Blues, are going to be resting guys, and Zach Parise is one of the guys that they're using as insurance for one of those guys that they don't want to get hurt. And that is like, you know, people think that you, like, some people have been almost accusing me of exaggerating the situation as much as 2 weeks ago. Sometimes I want to be like, let me cover the team. Like, I'm the one that's here. I'm the one that's reading the tea leaves. I'm the one that has obviously covered this game before. It was obvious where this thing was going, and it has hit that way. When Zach Parise returned for COVID, and he was Luke Johnson insurance on whether or not that Zach was going to play only if Luke Johnson was taken off waivers that night, I think that was a sign that things have changed here. And now he goes from being first line left wing with Kaprizov to open the season to second line, third line, fourth line, playing 10 minutes a night, playing 7 minutes a night, no power play, not on the ice in the end of games on 6-on-5 or 5-on-6. And now he's coming into game 56 of the season to allow somebody else to be not getting hurt in the game.
Yeah, it's changed for sure, and it's been a little sad to watch. I think Zach has played really well since he came back from the COVID break. I thought that was his best stretch of hockey, and when it didn't warrant a more significant role and more ice time, that told you what was going on. And you know, I don't think some of his public statements and his, what I'm guessing was then things that were said behind the scenes. It's strange this year because we haven't been down around the team at all. So we're really limited to pick up on, you know, some of that kind of stuff that ordinarily you would definitely see. But it gave you an idea that there was something that had happened there that really bothered either or both of Dean Evason and Bill Guerin. And I think Zach's paying the price for that right now. And I don't know where it goes from here. It seems evident where it goes this year, in that I just don't think he's going to be a major part of anything in the postseason, barring an injury somewhere, or, you know, maybe the team loses a couple games and it's a, hey, let's try anything kind of approach. But I do think it's something that has to, they got to figure it out as you get to the offseason, because it can't just be have this guy.
Yeah, it's going to come to a head.
It has to come to a head one way or the other. Yeah. And you know, not having been around it, I don't know for certain what it is, but I think there's no doubt that it was some of the things that were said through the media by Zach, and maybe face-to-face with coach and GM earlier this season, more than play on the ice, that has him sitting where he is. And that's a part of life too. And that's a part of hockey. That's a part of pro sports, that, you know, I mean, there are some guys who are just going to say, if that's your attitude, that's what you state, then I don't care. We're going to bump you down in the lineup and leave it there.
I mean, it's just interesting. And look, I mean, you know, whether you agree or not, I mean, Dean is obviously going with the lineup that he thinks is the best to put on the ice against, whether they play Colorado or Vegas. And I mean, you know, it was funny last week how Wild fans all thought that, you know, well, it's either going to be Parise or Victor Rask. Like, I don't know how much more evidence that we need that Dean and Billy see a ton into Victor Rask that maybe a lot of critics and fans don't see. So it was never going to be Victor. It was just going to always have to be almost him or Sturm, and Sturm started to play really well, or him and Bukestad. And I think they're going with the better skater is what they've decided there. They weren't ever pulling Bonino out. So it really is a numbers thing, but just how quickly it's changed. I mean, this guy led the team in goal scoring last year.
He's got more playoff games and points than anybody on the roster. And he's a proven power play scorer. And there's his history and his pedigree tells you that you need him to be a part of things. But I also look at these other guys that you mentioned, and if you just look at the guy individually and you say, well, you can't tell me that Zach Parise doesn't bring more than this guy. But the way the Wild are using these guys, their power play took off when, for whatever it's worth, they went with Nick Bonino and Victor Rask on it. They don't seem like conventional choices to be in a five-man power play, four forward, one defenseman.
Or even Hartman on the second pair. Yeah.
But what they wanted to do was start winning faceoffs on the power play, because they were chasing the puck for the first 30 or 40 seconds of every power play. And those two guys have brought that. Yeah. They've faceoffs have changed. They've been more successful on the power play. Nico Sturm has been tremendous as a penalty killer. And I still believe that in these playoffs, his speed in a defensive role is going to be a factor. And Zach doesn't bring that. Nick Bukestad brings a little bit bigger, longer body, and in more of a defensive role, that's different. So I think there are some elements that, where you look at the guys and you say, okay, the way the roster is set up right now and the way the lineup is set up right now, I think you're right. If Dean and Billy thought that they had a better chance to win clearly with Parise in the lineup, he'd be in the lineup no matter what the personal conflict might be. But I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting on the power play with Zach, and I feel terrible for this guy. I mean, this is not easy. It's his hometown. He's absolutely embarrassed. Clearly, he's upset. You know, the power play is interesting because we've always looked at Zach as being this power play specialist. He had 12 freaking goals last year on the power play in a shortened season. He's 9 goals from matching Phil Housley for most by a Minnesota-born player. But when the Wild analytically, not even analytically, on video, looked at their power play when it was god-awful earlier this year, they looked at that number one unit and they felt Zach one wasn't being a net front guy like they wanted him to be. But also, I think they felt that he was throwing pucks away a lot, and that was creating a lot of minutes outside the zone, retrieving pucks, things like that. And so, you know, and then, you know, it's just crazy the way sometimes it works. And then they put Bonino and Rask on it, and somehow the thing starts taking off. So now he's just completely off. Even the other day, it's like, you know, Victor Rask doesn't score that empty net goal in that one game, and then he somehow stays on the ice in overtime and scores the overtime winner. But at that point, you're just like, holy crap, the way he was playing, maybe it would be Rask being taken out of the lineup. And then then you see how that game ended, and you're thinking, holy crap, Zach Parise might never play again. This is a tough situation, but it happens to older guys in this game. I mean, I mean, heck, Ryan Getzlaf with a healthy scratch in the second to last game of the season in Minnesota. We've seen it all year long throughout the NHL. You see it every single year. The only difference with Zach Parise, he's got 4 years left on his contract, which is why something's got to come. Something's got to happen this summer. Let's talk about Jack Eichel. That is the big name that's out there right now, top center. The Wild, I could tell you for a fact, have interest in him. A lot of it, like everything's going to be cost is everything. He makes $10 million a year for the next 5 years. The issue is that if you trade for him, you can't just trade picks and prospects. The Wild have to re-sign Kaprizov and Eriksson Ek and potentially Fiala this summer, unless Fiala's in this deal. So they are going to have to get... The only way this trade works, actually, is if Buffalo is willing to take top players off the Wild roster that make significant money, whether that's Fiala or Dumba and pick and prospect or what. I don't know if the fit is there. There's going to be a lot of teams coming after Jack Eichel, Anthony, and I don't know fit-wise, trade-wise, if you're the LA Kings is one team that has interest in Jack Eichel. They got tons of prospects, especially up the middle. The Wild really have one, maybe two, if you include Kuznetsov. But the other one is Rossi. We don't know what Buffalo even thinks of Rossi, let alone the fact that he's coming off the COVID issue. So, I just don't know if at the end of the day, as much as Wild fans are clamoring for this big right shot centerman that's not even 24, that's 24, if they're going to even have the fit to make it work.
Well, I think maybe the better question is, let's just say hypothetically that the price tag, which it seems like it is going to be two, if not sure things, very, very close to sure things, meaning an established NHL really good player and maybe as close as you can come to a can't-miss prospect. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, for Minnesota, to me, it looks like, and this is absolutely... shooting from the hip. This is not like, oh, I heard the Wild are doing this. Let's say you had to give up Kevin Fiala and Matt Dumba to make the deal. Would you do it?
If Kevin Fiala and Matt Dumba were in the deal?
Let's just say it was those two guys for Jack Eichel. Would you do the deal?
I probably would.
I think it's worth considering, and partially because you've got the expansion situation
looming.
It solves
some expansion issues.
It solves a little bit of that, and the money probably works out. It gives you a tie. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say because I loved what I saw from Kevin Fiala last year in the playoffs. He looked like a guy that was a, hop on my back and let's go kind of offensive producer. And I still believe he could be that guy if playing with the right kind of offensive minded guys. But if you're going to try and acquire a guy like Eichel, who, this guy was a number two overall pick.
Yeah.
Those guys don't come around very often. You have to give up something major to make it work.
And it's not Dumba. in other words, that's not the something major. And that's the thing. It's like Billy Guerin is going to have to look at them and say, all right, if they're trading Jack Eichel, they're going to want a top young center in return, and Ek is unavailable. I could promise you that. So if you're Billy Guerin, and maybe he's not even willing to give up Marco Rossi, or maybe Buffalo has no interest in Marco Rossi, there's going to have to be a huge piece going to Buffalo to get Jack Eichel. And I can promise you it's not Kaprizov. So it's got to be Fiala.
Well, that's the only reason I threw those guys out. This is not me saying, hey, I think you should do this, or Buffalo's interested, or I think Billy's offering it. I'm just looking at the guys and I'm 100%. Saying there's no way you move Eriksson Ek right now.
Yeah.
And Eriksson Ek, in my opinion, is the least risk in terms, the lowest risk in terms of any of these guys that have to be re-signed. His game isn't going to change when he signs his next contract. Right. I mean, when you look at him, do you really think the bank account's going to affect his effort level every night?
No.
And, there are some guys where that is a factor.
And Fiala could be one.
He could be one. We don't know. We know Eriksson Ek is not. And so if you think you can lock him up for 5-6 years at $4.5 million bucks. I mean, you lock him up and he's a stalwart. He's an irreplaceable type guy right now. Not that he's your best. He might be the hardest to replace.
Sometimes you have to also read between the lines as a reporter. And if the Wild are willing to break the bank on Eriksson Ek and give 8 years to Kaprizov, but you keep on hearing through the grapevine that they don't want to go long-term with Fiala, I think that's telling you that maybe that the same belief is happening inside the organization. I love Fiala though. I watch him lately and I'm so impressed with his game. And the other thing that if you think that he you know, if there's always that concern that he's the type of guy that would let all of a sudden a little security make him fat and happy, I think that his competitiveness that we see in his desire to compete with Kaprizov and not be the one that's just second fiddle always is something that will continue to motivate him long term, which is why I wouldn't. And the other thing with him is, like, you see that he's elevating his game now. He wants to be that guy in the playoffs. So I actually think that's less of an issue more than just the fact that you're going to have to give up somebody off your roster that's going to have to really whet the appetite of the Buffalo Sabres. And I think Fiala is that guy, since the Wild, as we all know, don't have that center. It's just going to be an interesting thing. The other thing that I will say is, what do you think of Eichel? Like, I keep on hearing a lot of bad. Like, I got texts the other day after my article on Eichel from, like, players in the league. Is like, the guy's a dog. Wild need to stay away from him. He doesn't work hard. He mopes. You know, I had executives that talked to me for that Who Says No story that questioned his character. I don't know this. He's obviously an extremely talented player and physically exactly what the Wild lack in their lineup. And you could replace wingers easier than centers. So in other words, if you give up Fiala, okay, well, you got Boldy and Beckman and all these other guys coming. What do you think of Eichel as a whole?
Well, I'm absolutely in agreement with you. And it's so coincidental that you asked this question, because when Vinny and I were driving home from your house after watching the game last night, he brought up the Jack Eichel thing. We had a similar conversation about the type of package that it would take to get him. And I said, I just don't think you know enough about him, because there's a very good chance, when you look at it and you say, well, he's been a part of such crap in Buffalo for these years, maybe he's a part of the problem rather than a guy who just wasn't enough to be the solution. And there's a big difference there. And I don't know is the short answer.
Yeah.
But I've kind of heard and read some of the same kind of things. And I don't like the way he was made it so public that he wasn't happy. And I mean, that to me isn't the guy where I'd love to grab the guy that is like, it's not my job to build the roster. It's my job to come here, play hard every night, and see if we can win.
Yeah.
And that's not at all what I've heard from Jack Eichel over the years.
Well, here's a great example. Fiala. Like, if anybody on this team had a right to be a little ticked off this year, it's probably Fiala, right? He's the one that always seems to get, like, the short shrift when in terms of line mates and things like that. And yet, again, I don't know what he's feeling behind the scenes, but every time we ask him about this on Zoom, he's like, it's my job to just play with whoever. I'm happy with whoever's on my line. And so that's why it's like, there are times where I feel like Fiala gets a short shrift, and it would really be a shame to see him leave, because he looks like he has the ability to be a true game breaker and goal scorer. You know, a couple more minutes on the show. I did want to ask you about Reinhardt. Like, that would be like 1B there, maybe 2A. If you don't want to spend the huge amount of money on Jack Eichel from an asset standpoint and money standpoint, if you're Billy Guerin, would you go after Reinhardt? He's available too. Or is that too many Sabres always coming to the Wild for your liking?
we are getting a little too much Buffalo-esque. I don't mind Reinhardt, actually. And, you know, perhaps the cost is significantly lower and a deal could make more sense there. I got to say, I'd be really hesitant to pull the trigger on the major Eichel type deal. I'm not sure about that yet. Reinhardt maybe more so if it was a one piece kind of thing, or a piece and maybe a second tier prospect guy. I might have some more interest in a deal like that. Cause I really think that it's just unfortunate the Wild don't know what they have in Rossi. Mm-hmm. If you were at this point at the end of this season and you at least had been able to watch him this year and had a better handle on what you had there, it would make that decision a lot easier. Because if you really thought there's without a doubt we've got a top six centerman right there, now maybe you look at it and say, this deal now makes sense, because you put those two guys down the middle and Eck as a third line centerman, holy cow, you got something going. But if you don't know Rossi for sure yet, I'm not sure you want to give away one of your two game breakers in order to get a different guy in the front. I don't know.
It's a tough spot. It wouldn't cost you a Fiala or something like that. But again, you got to afford
it. I'm talking about that's why I hesitate on the Eichel deal.
That's how I feel. But again, money is everything. And, you know, Fiala's going to want some big money this summer. And And that's why I'm pretty sure if you do the math, I think it'll be in it. Anthony, I did something yesterday that I've been doing a lot of lately. I went to Delwood Country Club and I bought some t-shirts. And everybody that knows me knows that I basically wear the same uniform every day, slacks and a pullover or button-down shirt. But I've lost so much weight lately that since I've joined Profile by Sanford that I'm now buying entire new wardrobes on a consistent basis. That's how fast the weight just keeps dripping off. I feel better about myself, and more importantly, I feel so much healthier. If your weight is getting out of control or you need a summer tune-up, just like Aquarius Home Services with your AC, if you need a body tune-up, now's the time to get into Profile by Sanford and let them customize a nutrition plan for you. They'll support you throughout the journey with weekly coaching and delicious food. If you want a consultation, give Profile by Sanford a try by going to profileplan.com and telling them that Russo sent you. And here is a word from Minnesota Propane.
Hi, I'm Laura Shara. And do you really know what it costs to heat water at your home, cabin, or business? No? Well, we do. Based on data from the U.S. Department of Energy, the average annual savings for homes that heat their water with propane rather than electricity is $175. You can save energy and get 2.5 times as much hot water compared to the average electric water heater. Let's save energy and money with a cleaner, greener fuel. Propane. The right energy right now.
My friend Chris Lindahl tells me the real estate market is on the move, the weather's warming up, the interest rates are changing, and competition is growing, and people are flooding to Chris Lindahl Real Estate's Guaranteed Offer Program. Why? Because it knocks down those two big barriers to selling. When you get a guaranteed offer, you get full market value for your home without doing a single showing. Buyers won't visit your home, and you could take up to 3 months to close, so you have plenty of time to find your new home. Guaranteed Offer is about control, convenience, and confidence. It's so easy, you'll never go back to the old way of selling. Call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no obligation guaranteed offer on your home. That's chrislindahl.com. Got a Twitter question, an interesting one. I don't know, Anthony, if you had a chance yet to read my Derek Bugard piece today. But today
I haven't read it, actually.
Yeah, today is the 10-year anniversary of his death. It was just a shocking, shocking night. I'll never forget it for as long as I live in downtown Minneapolis. I lived less than a mile from him, just over the bridge. And I still remember looking outside my patio and seeing the lights outside when I got word that he passed. And I almost in disbelief went out to my patio and looked across the river. And there I saw sirens and everything. And somebody asked me, Greg Anderson says in a very touching article in Derek Bugard, my question is, how do you handle information that you may acquire about a player's situation like Derek's while he was still with us? I realize it's a delicate situation and can't be easy. This is a really good question, Greg, because you know I've been talking to my editors about this for a while. I talked to the Bugard family about this as well, because if you haven't read the story, I talked to both his parents, Len and Joanne Bugard, talked to his brothers, Aaron and Ryan, and his sister, Chris. And you know, I still feel like such a moron when I covered him. Like, I had no clue, zero clue. Like, that summer I went with him, I you know, would text with him all the time. We went to Canterbury once, I went to lunch with him a couple times, and I just never had a clue. And in hindsight, I look at it, I'm like, how did you not know? And I guess maybe I just never even had really experience with the you know, addiction from opioids at that point, that I had no clue why he was in a haze. Like, I remember vividly on August 30th, him coming to the State Fair to unveil the third jersey for the Wild. And I was texting him with all week, and he was going to sit down with me at the State Fair, and we're going to do a big training camp feature in there. And I remember him coming and looking at him, and he was in a haze. He was unfriendly. He walked right by me, sort of blew me off. I felt he blew off the fans. He talked weird to the fans. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, what? Like, I was angry with him. And I not one part of me ever thought that something was going on with him. And so that's the weirdest thing about this whole situation, is that after he passed away and you found out how he died, I mean, that March, 2 months before he died, and I've talked about this many times, I got together with him in New York City, and we walked around the city together. We went to a Starbucks. He essentially cried on my shoulder about his concussions. I mean, literally tears falling. And I, again, never knew the other stuff. And now you look back and you're like, man, if I only knew. You know, like you, how would you have handled it? But to get to the point of your question, Greg, is that I didn't know. Sometimes there are times where you do have to, you learn stuff that, you know, you have to keep under wraps for delicate reasons. A perfect example of that is Marco Rossi, the month before it came out that what his issues were. I mean, that's one where I was trying to be extremely respectful to a kid's health situation that the team didn't want out, that he didn't want out, things like that. I guess when you look back to the Bugard situation, you know, how does it make you feel? Because, you know, part of me is also guilt. Like, we glamorized his fighting. I used to celebrate it with my articles, the features I've written on him. I read back some of my features on him that I'm very proud of, but I look at the words that I use to describe his fighting, and I'm just like, if I had only known what headshots did to the human brain, which again seems so obvious, I would have written these stories in a totally different light.
Yeah, well, you were a lot closer to him than I was. I was doing pre and post game shows at the time, so I had very little personal interaction with the guy, a couple times at charity events and things. So, I mean, I really don't have any specific memories of times with him where I look back now and say, boy, how did I not see what was happening? But I do think your point about your stories and glamorizing it, who knows what we'll be looking back on 15 years from now. Because right now, I mean, we talk on a much, much lower scale, smaller scale. The game has changed. The league has changed. But we still talk about the guys that are willing to stand up for teammates. And we talk about Marcus Foligno that way. And, you know, what if 15 years from now we were looking back on something else like that? What if during this COVID time we're looking back 15 years later saying the guys that had COVID now have this problem and we weren't talking about it enough at this time. You just never know. I mean, but it's such an interesting spot because when you're covering pro athletes, it's so easy to look at them only as a piece on the chessboard, as some kind of a trading chip. You look at them in a very impersonal way, just in terms of value for a team. And you so often have to take a step back and say, remember, this is a human.
Yeah.
That might be dealing with something like what Derek was dealing with, or he's dealing with stress at home or a sick wife or a sick child, or you just sometimes that stuff, you just all guys in a slump and you find yourself bad mouthing him for a few days and then you find out that, well, his wife is going into the ICU tomorrow, and you feel like you want to take everything you just thought or said, even if it was said in jest around the dinner table.
Yeah.
You want to take it back because you just feel like, I can't imagine going and trying to do what he's doing when he's dealing with that at home. So it's,
I remember there's when, a lot when, of stuff. I remember that. When Eric Stahl's father-in-law died right before the trade deadline last year, and the COVID shutdown, I remember thinking like, you know, man, if I'd only known what he was going, because he told us obviously after he came back, what he had been going on for 2 months and how traumatic the situation. You never know what's going on with anybody's lives as well. Hopefully everybody will read the Derek Bugard piece. It's definitely a piece that, it's a tough read, but something I'm proud of, and hopefully gives you a little more glimpse of into what he was dealing with and things like that. Last question of the show, Anthony, somebody asks, how do you balance working with different partners every night? I mean, you know, it is a different, whether it's Gigi or Mark Parrish this year, Ryan Carter, Lunani, or Wes Walls, it probably changes. You've got to know their style to affect the way that you're going to call a game, right?
Yeah, you do. And it starts with the prep, because you have to know the kinds of things that they're going to want to talk about. So there are some things that I might put together when I'm doing the research that I know, well, when I'm building this, I'm not quite certain that Gigi Marvin's going to have anything to add to this. Mm-hmm. Or that if I build this, I'm not sure Louis has, he's watching games from Florida. Well, I don't know how closely he's watching them, but at the same time, we had Louis on just before the trade deadline, and I got to look up everything he ever did at a trade deadline, because he's likely to go into some story that's going to be fascinating to people, and I want to make sure I know the details of that. There are things compared, like Wes and Ryan Carter, who are my two main guys. The things they like to talk about are very different, And there are a lot that overlap, but there are some that are different. So where Gigi might be more interested in talking about the specifics of a defensive zone coverage and a breakout, Wes Walls likes to talk a lot more about the matchups because that's the kind of player he was. And Ryan Carter wants to talk more about the players' mentalities. And he's got a little closer connection to this team because he still has some former teammates inside mm-hmm. that room. So it is very different. It sometimes can be refreshing. It sometimes can be challenging. I think it's been good this year. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen in the future, but it can certainly bring some interesting ways of looking at games just to have it through a different set of eyes sometimes. And over a course of 82, that can be a good thing. And it does present some challenges too, because the timing is everything in hockey. And you know, I hadn't worked with Mark Parrish for, I think we did a couple high school games way, way back, but I hadn't worked with him for years. Talked with him a lot, but it's different when you're sitting next to him and working the game. And even in those spots, there were a couple times where it was, okay, this just happened about four or five games ago, but I don't remember for sure if Mark was doing the pre and post night. So I don't know for sure that he would have been watching the game like start to finish. So you find yourself, well, I don't want to refer to that play in Anaheim in the corner the other night because I don't know that he, without a doubt, that he was watching it. So there's challenges. But they also, it's brought some color to the shows, I think, and we'll see. I think that the postseason is going to be in the booth anyway, mostly Wes and Ryan Carter. I don't know if they've figured out exactly that schedule yet, but that's what the last I heard, the way they were headed, and then all the others will be involved with the pre- and post-game show. Yeah. So it'll be interesting, and you know, hopefully we've got a bunch of games where they all get their opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. What a challenging year for you, though. I was watching that one San Jose game on a replay a couple of weeks ago, and even at one point Mark Parrish is like, I assume the goalie's off for an extra attacker, because it's like you right. just don't see behind the play.
I remember that night well. Because we just figured the puck went the other way. Well, they had to pull the goalie, and all of a sudden the puck came back down and the goalie was still there. Yeah. And we thought,
what is Boone waiting for?
What's he waiting for? So then the puck came back into the offensive zone for San Jose, and we just assumed he had given up. Like, okay, I'm down two, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And then the Wild all of a sudden fling a puck that way, and the goalie's gone. They just got an empty net. I mean, I never even knew the goalie was out, and Minnesota got an empty net goal. So it was, there's times, it's that part. It's tough and it's no fun and you can't see the game, and we're going to have to deal with that in the playoffs. We're still not going to be traveling in the playoffs. But that's what we got this year. So,
well, the last thing I did before I came over to your house to do this podcast was book two flights for Saturday, one to Vegas, one to Colorado. I'll cancel one after tonight's game. You know which one I hope I cancel.
Yep.
And next week, when we do next week's podcast, we'll know exactly where the Wild are, and we'll see where they are in the series as well. Anthony, good show. Thanks for letting me in your very quiet home.
You're welcome anytime.
And I come here all excited to see. First of all, you come to my house last night. I'm like, where's Phil and Stanley? I was so disappointed you didn't bring them. And then I come here. I'm like, well, at least I'll get to see him today. Yep. And I don't even get to see Margo today, let alone Phil and Stanley.
Yeah, they might be back here shortly. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks. Thanks as always to our podcast sponsors as well. Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatments. Kowalski's, Bosch Law Firm, Profiled by Sanford, Minnesota Propane Association, and Chris Lindahl Real Estate. And by the way, if you want to ever host us for a live show, get us out remotely with a crowd of people as well, big War Seats in the House fans out there, you can email Karen Cleary, KCLERY, at talknorth.com. Talk to you next week, Anthony. So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never going to win. One of us is actually working throughout the playoffs. I look at this playoff, first round playoff series, and you've got to maybe work 2 days.